Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live in the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It is 5 o'clock, which means Chad Withrow joins us from OutKick. So, Chad, the NCAA has decided, either them or CBS or True TV or whoever the hell it is, that we're going to have to stay up until about 11:30 tonight watching college basketball. The Vols do not tip off for 4 hours. My question for you is, Sweet 16, very respectable team in Creighton, what is the nervousness versus the excitement level amongst you and the rest of Vol fans?
I think it's probably 60-40 anxiety to excitement. I'd say 60-40, you know, nervous energy. To excitement. Luckily for me, I'm going to go to church after this for Good Friday. And then I'm going to get home probably about an hour before tip off. But that is a long wait. I know some people up in Detroit, Jared, getting ready for that game. That is a long time to sit around all day and then to go pregame and wait for a basketball game to tip off when you're talking about 10 o'clock, 10:15 Eastern time up in Detroit for a tip off. So that can definitely lead to more anxiety. Look, this Tennessee team, I've not wavered from my expectations of what success would mean for this group. It is Elite Eight or beyond, and it felt like a team all year that was very capable of making the program's first ever Final Four. I still believe that. I think they're better than Creighton. I think it's a tough matchup. You don't get to be a number three seed in the NCAA tournament. You don't beat UConn the way that Creighton did without being a really good team. But I like Tennessee coming off a bad offensive performance against Texas to right the ship on offense in this game. But, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some anxiety, especially after Alabama wins last night. You know, they're able to get to their second ever Elite Eight, and Tennessee's trying to do the same. So I think there's a little bit more nervous energy watching Alabama get over a number one seed in North Carolina and get into the Elite Eight. Now Tennessee fans want to do the same.
So I was actually going to ask you about that Alabama-UNC game because – I felt like the game that Tennessee played at Alabama, Tennessee out-toughed Alabama in the end. And I thought last night Alabama actually out-toughed UNC. You know, UNC at the end of the game, they're trying to get to the bucket and they just cannot do it. And I wondered if you looked at that and said, okay, this is a sign that if an SEC team plays physically and they get good play out of their bigs, which Alabama did last night, that Tennessee should be able to handle Creighton.
I mean, I just think Tennessee's so much physically tougher than Alabama.
Yeah.
Right. Alabama to me is a bit of an anomaly because we know how great they are on offense and the way Nate Oates coaches, it's going to be giving a lot of confidence and a lot of green lights to his guys to pull up and shoot a lot of threes. And you're going to get to the bucket or you're going to shoot a three. So the offensive part doesn't surprise me. But the ideals that we have for teams that advance deep in the NCAA tournament, defense is always a part of that. And Alabama's bucking the trend. They're 104th in defensive efficiency, and I think they're fourth on offense. But the problem is the teams ahead of them are UConn, Purdue, and Illinois are the top three offensive teams, and they're all still alive in the tournament too. But Tennessee is one of those teams that you look at and you say, okay, this is a Final Four national champion type team because they're fourth overall in defense. And I think they're 28th right now in offense, so a little bit further behind some of those, but still a top 30 team in offensive efficiency. And they're tough. You know, they showed that against Texas. I thought they were physically tougher in a game against a really physically tough, rugged team in Texas, the way they played that game. So, yeah, I'm with you. I was impressed with Alabama's toughness in that game. They showed something they hadn't shown a lot this year, and they did it at the right time. But I think Tennessee's far more tough and a tougher team, especially defensively, than Alabama has been all year.
Chad Withrow's with us. What did you make of the Texas game? Was it a, wow, they found a way to survive in advance? Or did it make you nervous, given that it really did have all the makings of a Rick Barnes classic, other than the fact that Tennessee just found a way to win?
I mean, I was terrified. My blood pressure was through the roof. I'm not going to lie, because I'm watching it. And I'm watching with my wife, and I'm saying, this is so Tennessee basketball and Rick Barnes.
Yeah.
That Tennessee basketball is one of the three or four best college basketball programs that have never appeared in a Final Four. And always something like this happens. And honestly, I was feeling bad for Rick Barnes watching that game because I'm thinking only Rick Barnes could bring in a transfer from Northern Colorado who was not first team all Big Sky. And that guy is going to become the program's first ever consensus first team All-American. And this dude is going to go 0-for-9 from three in the biggest moment in round two of the NCAA tournament. I'm thinking only Rick Barnes would have this happen to him and only Tennessee basketball. But Jared, they found a way. I left that game after they won, after my blood pressure settled and my heart rate settled. And I thought, I've never been more confident going into a Sweet 16 than having watched Tennessee shoot 3-for-25 from three. And they hit two of them in the last 3 minutes of those three shots they hit from deep. And they found a way to win. They hit big clutch free throws. Adu hit two big ones. Connect hit four big ones late in the game. And I'm thinking, this team is top 30 offensively in the country. They're not going to play like that again. Ziegler's going to hit some shots. Connect's going to hit some shots. I immediately started thinking, Connect's about to go off for 30-plus in the next game against Creighton or whoever they play. We'll see if Tennessee can match that defensive effort they had against Texas. Creighton's way better on offense. They were a bit lucky that Texas is also bad on offense in that game to get through that one. But, yeah, I mean, I was scared to death watching that game. This is exactly how they lose. But lo and behold, they found a way to win a game they normally always lose.
It's funny. You talk about how you felt thinking about Rick Barnes watching the game. I was so happy when Tennessee won. And I was saying to myself, you know me, I don't. What do I care if Tennessee wins? But I was so happy. And I was trying to figure out, am I happy because I told everybody, like, hey, believe in this year's Tennessee team, this team's different, whatever? Or was I happy, you know, rooting for the take? Or was I happy because Rick Barnes deserves better? Like, he's a good man. He's a good coach. He just always craps his pants. And I realized that it was that. And I just didn't want that to happen with this team. And so I don't know if I'd have more confidence in this game because Creighton's not going to be as unforgiving as Texas was. And if they play the way they played Saturday, they will lose tonight. I am convinced of that, Chad.
Yeah, and I don't think any Tennessee fan is looking for a national title in basketball. But, I mean, you hit on it, Jared. It's a respect and admiration for Rick Barnes, the steady program that he's built.
He's a great coach. He just doesn't win in March.
Right, he doesn't win at all. And we had Casey Alexander in studio yesterday and kind of asked him about Tennessee. And he said, well, first off, he's done an amazing job at Tennessee when you look at the consistency there. And he said it's kind of that old adage of, do you want to be relevant for 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years and constantly in the mix? Or do you want one run to a Final Four and then not making the tournament other times? And Casey Alexander said, I'd rather take the consistency and always being relevant, having something to root on, you know, for seasons on end. And I do agree with him on that with Rick Barnes. And I keep going back to Alabama last night, and I'm thinking, man, if there's any justice, Nate Oates, who would not suspend Brandon Miller for bringing a gun to the scene of a murder a year ago and how that was botched. Nate Oates, who has a dude elbowing and kicking guys in the face this year and waits on the SEC to do something to suspend him. I'm like, if there's any justice, Rick Barnes needs to get to a Final Four before Nate Oates does. And I think Nate Oates is a great basketball coach. Clearly, he's done a good job with that Alabama program, and they win a ton. But if anyone is deserving of it, it is absolutely Rick Barnes and how long he's been in the game and how many programs he's coached. And to do it with this group would be very important. But it's the history, right? I mean, you know it, Jared. You've talked about it. Sure. It's not just the history of Rick Barnes. To me, it's the history of Tennessee basketball that I am so reluctant to be overly confident, even though my brain is telling me they survived the terrible shooting performance. They're going to come out and shoot better in this game. They're going to continue to play as hard as they always do and play good defense, and they're going to win and get to the Elite Eight, and they're going to have a puncher's chance against Zach Edey and Purdue. My brain is telling me all this, and every other part of me is saying they're going to go out there and shoot 3-for-30 in this game tonight instead of 3-for-25 and they're going to lose by 15 points.
Well, in fairness to that, I don't even think it's just Tennessee basketball that has Tennessee fans that way. I mean, like, baseball a couple of years ago when they were the number one team in the country and they didn't even make it out of the Super Regionals. And it's like, I feel like Tennessee fans probably feel like this happens to them a lot. Chad Withrow's with us. Is Tennessee playing with house money if they win tonight and they get into an Elite Eight against Purdue? And are they playing with house money now?
They're not playing with house money now. It will still be a disappointment because they made the Sweet 16 a year ago with a team that no one thought, when Zakai Ziegler went down, would get to the Sweet 16. I'll actually give, you know, Rick Barnes some credit in that one. To beat Duke the way they did and get to the Sweet 16 was an accomplishment. But then there was still disappointment because they lose to FAU, you know, who's the upstart, what, 8 or 9 seed a year ago, and they lose to them in Madison Square Garden. I was there for that one. This has been consistently for me Elite Eight or Final Four or bust for this team. So there, I will be disappointed. There will be some disappointment with Tennessee fans if they lose tonight. So no house money yet. If they win this game, I think considering the circumstances of playing a Purdue team that is even more starving than Tennessee, given their loss to a 16 seed last year, given their number one seed status, given the fact they have a guy who's the returning Naismith player of the year that's likely to win it again, I can't sit here and say, boy, Tennessee should absolutely win that game. I feel like they need to win tonight to avoid more disappointment from Vols fans. Not that this team was a disappointment all year or any of that, but the finish of the season, to me, will be disappointing if they don't go out and win tonight against Creighton. And I think they should.
Chad Withrow is with us. It is time for the hot seat. We will do that coming up next. And I'm very excited about the list of hot seat questions we have. So we will do that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company Fireball Hot Take Friday. Chad Withrow with us from Outkick. It is time for the hot seat. Chad, do you have a thought or do you want to get right to the hot seat?
Yeah, my thought is congrats on all your success, Jared. Show's doing very well.
Thank you.
I just want to point that out. Happy to be a part of the success.
Big part.
Happy to be a part of this segment every week, Fridays, 5 to 5:30. So with that being said, now I am ready for the hot seat.
All right, let's go right to it. Number one. Did Kentucky make the right call with John Calipari? And if not, who should Kentucky have hired?
Of course not. Of course they didn't make the right call. Mitch Barnhart knows they didn't make the right call. Mitch Barnhart put out a tweet that was the most muted statement I've ever seen and had such a lack of enthusiasm that basically mirrored the entire Kentucky fan base. It sounded as defeated as possible without actually hearing his voice that, hey, he's going to return for another season. That's all he said. We're not excited about it. We're not ready to roll. John Calipari had his big William Wallace Braveheart speech on his coach's show where we got to unite, you know, unite the clans. We got to get everybody together. We got to go from Hopkinsville to coal mining country. We got to even go up to Louisville for our fans there. We got to go down to Bowling Green. Everyone needs to unite, and no one's united with the Kentucky fan base because no one wants Calipari there. So no, absolutely not. They didn't make the right decision. What they did was they made the decision that's going to save them $6 million on a buyout if they do it next year. And I also think that if Mitch Barnhart's not there long-term, I don't think Kentucky people want him making the next hire. So maybe it is a Mitch Barnhart will move on, be out in the next year. And then it'll be a new AD firing John Calipari and then hiring the next guy.
That's amazing considering that Barnhart hates Cal, but the whole thing's been amazing anyways. Okay, number two. Is Danny Hurley building a dynasty at Connecticut?
Yes. It's built, I feel like. If they cement it and win this national title and win two in a row for the first time since Florida did it, 06-07, and they do it the way they've done it. They averaged winning by 20 points per game a year ago. They were at 28 points per game going into last night, and they won by 30 in the Sweet 16. Jared, they're becoming the villain of this decade. And villains in college basketball are great. Hoya Paranoia and Georgetown and John Thompson in the 80s.
UNLV.
They begat UNLV. Jerry Tarkanian and the Running Rebs in the early 90s. Duke was America's sweetheart when they lost by 30 to UNLV, then they beat them in a big upset. They win the national title. But then they went back-to-back, and Christian Laettner stomping on Aminu Timberlake in Kentucky and suddenly Duke's a villain. They've been a villain ever since. I mean, go down the list of villains.
Calipari's Memphis team.
Calipari's Kentucky team that was undefeated. America celebrated when Wisconsin beat them in 2015 in the Final Four. College basketball loves a good villain. And Danny Hurley's out here trying to fight dudes in the stands. He's talking about his Lucky Dragon underwear. He's beaten teams by 30 points per game in the NCAA tournament. UConn is America's next villain if they go on and win a second straight national title. And I think that's good for the sport.
My dad made the comment last night. He thinks that UConn's men's team is becoming UConn's women's team. And I'm like, they kind of are. You know, with his, they're not recruiting all the best players and having just better players than everybody the way that Geno did it for all those years. But, like, they're beating everybody by 25, 30 points, and that's what UConn's women's team did for forever. And it does kind of feel that way. Okay. Do you buy the J.J. McCarthy draft hype?
I have a hard time buying it because J.J. McCarthy, throughout his career, was a guy who's a very good quarterback for Michigan, won a national title. But he was always kind of seen as, man, he's a really good game manager for a run-first Michigan team. But I never viewed him as a guy who's going to go win you games by himself as a quarterback in college or the NFL. So I don't buy it. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of intangibles that make people fall in love with him. You know who he is to me a little bit, and I think he's more athletic than this guy, but he's Mac Jones. I think Mac Jones has a lot of intangibles that when you talk to him or put him on the chalkboard, you're going to love him. In a film room, in a meeting room, you probably love him. He won a ton at Alabama, obviously.
He led them to a championship, just like J.J. did with all the great players around him.
Yeah, J.J. did the same thing, right? Won a ton of games, won a title with a great supporting cast. I think Mac Jones is kind of a punk, and I think he's a cheap shot artist, as we found out in the NFL. I don't know that McCarthy is that, but I get strong Mac Jones vibes out of J.J. McCarthy. I don't think he's going as high in the draft as some people think.
Where would you rank Will Levis amongst this year's quarterback class?
If he was coming out this year or if he's like back in the draft after 1 year in the NFL?
As if he was 1 year after what you've seen out of him in the NFL.
I mean, he might be number one, honestly, because I don't love this crop of quarterbacks. Drake May's the guy I want to say is the best. I don't like Caleb Williams. I don't like a lot of things about him. There's a ton of red flags with him. I want to say Drake May is the guy. And I wanted to say that coming into the season, but I can't ignore the fact that for two straight Novembers, North Carolina can't win a single game.
Yeah.
So there is a law of diminishing returns with him in college that I don't love. Jaden Daniels shot on the scene this year. Maybe it's Jaden Daniels over Will Levis. But I really think you can make an argument that Will Levis might be the best quarterback in this draft class if he's coming out this year, in my opinion. Now, everyone would want to draft Caleb Williams over him, but I think he's probably one or two if he's coming out this year.
Wow. We have breaking news. The Titans have officially made the trade for L'Jarius Sneed. Took long enough. Took an entire week. Which leads me to the next question, which is, how nervous are you about L'Jarius Sneed's knees?
I'm nervous that no other team had a better offer. And that makes me – I don't think of the Titans as just so super smart that, you know, they could outfox the rest of the league and get L'Jarius Sneed, who was awesome, by the way, awesome at corner for the world champion Chiefs, that they could get him for that low of a price. Now, I also think the Titans are in a very unique situation that, and I'll go ahead and save you from jumping in and saying the cap isn't real, but they have a ton of cap space and they have a ton of money to spend. And so there aren't a lot of teams in the Titans position where they could trade for him and then eventually sign him for the money that he wants. I'm a little surprised that the Chiefs didn't just stick with the franchise tag and make him play there. But, yeah, I mean, I'm very encouraged by what the Titans have done this offseason. We got to see the draft and what positions they go after there. But L'Jarius Sneed, to me, is another huge win for this team this offseason.
I am nervous about the knee. Because I think that a player of his caliber, even with the contract, a player of his caliber goes for a low one or a two this year, not a three next year. So that makes me nervous.
You had the Julio Jones scoop on his injury issues, right, before he got here. So if you're hearing bad things about the knee, then maybe I'll trust you on that one. But I saw him play a year ago, and I really liked it. So hopefully he does more of that for the Titans.
Now, he is a great player. Okay, am I as right to be as worried as I am about the Titans' right tackle position, given that it looks like Nicholas Petit-Ferrer or Jalen Duncan will enter training camp battling for the starter's job?
Yeah, they need a better right tackle. I mean, they need a better option than those two guys battling it out. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure of your level of concern on that or level of freak out, but they should be concerned about that. That is a liability right now, and that's not a great spot to have a big liability. But, yeah, I mean, the Titans should be concerned about that. The hope is either through the draft or something, they get someone else that could be better at that spot than those two guys. But I think you're right to be very concerned about that position.
Last one for you. Bill Belichick is reportedly authoring a book. Are you interested in reading Bill Belichick's book?
No, because I've been watching The Dynasty on Apple TV.
The Dynasty sucks, by the way.
Bill Belichick says nothing, and Tom Brady says nothing. I'm watching this because I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be the last dance for the Patriots, and they're going to talk as openly as Michael Jordan did about people and about things, and I'm just not getting that from the documentary. Now, other guys are saying a lot, but I want to hear from Brady and Belichick, and I just haven't heard enough from them. It's entertaining to go back in time and remember those moments that we all watched, but given what I've seen from him and that tell-all situation, no, I'm not interested in the book.
I just think that when Belichick did that, he was still the coach of the Patriots. And so when he sat there, it was like every question he was being asked, it's like, you know, well, you know, I'm in the position of being coach of the Patriots. Now that he's not coach of the Patriots, maybe he will expand on why he benched Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl or why he wouldn't trade Aaron Hernandez when Aaron Hernandez asked for a trade and the guy ended up dying and all those other things. Like, maybe he will talk about that. I would agree with you, though. Like, I remember there was, Seth Wickersham, I think, either wrote a book. I think it was a book. He wrote a book about the Patriots, you know, kind of the inside story. And I remember when Wickersham sent Floyd an email asking if he'd sit down for an interview, and he just, you know, deleted the email and laughed. And I said, well, aren't you going to email the guy back and say, like, nah, I'm not interested? He said, nope. He said, because I don't want to be talking, and Bill doesn't want me talking. Ha, 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 ha. And so now I'm like, what's Bill's book? Is Bill's book going to be like chapter 3, why I didn't play Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl? I made a decision that was best for the team. Chapter 4. Why, like, what's he going to, is he going to be Belichick, or is he going to tell us what he actually thinks?
It's going to be better than that. I mean, we've seen Belichick when he's not, you know, fully on the record as a coach of a team. He can be charming. He can tell stories. He goes back in the history of the game, and he can speak, and he can do it in a better way than that. So it's going to be better than the way you're describing it. But I just don't think, I don't know that we're ever going to get this full unleashed Bill Belichick telling all the tales and all the stories we want to hear. I don't think we're ever going to get it.
How much money do you think Belichick's getting for a book? Got to be like $5 million, right?
How much do people get for books now? I don't know.
So I remember
the book market like? I don't know how much books are worth in today's society.
So I'm sure that it's, you know, way more now than it used to be. But I remember when Bill Clinton wrote My Life, which I think I was in high school when that came out. And so we're talking 20 years ago. But I remember he got like a record $5 million advance for his book, which was then beaten by Oprah's weight loss book, which I think got $6
million. Yeah. Says a lot about our country.
Oprah got
more than a former president's memoir. Incredible. I mean, I guess like if that maybe $2.5-3 million he's going to make from it. I don't know. I'm not that interested in it. I'm going to keep watching The Dynasty and hope it gets better. But based on that, I'm not that into it.
Have you gotten to the Aaron Hernandez episode?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, I think The Dynasty kind of – I thought it was overrated. Like compared to The Last Dance, it's not even – I mean,
yeah, well, because they wouldn't talk. You know, they brought in Brandon Lloyd, who had a lot to say, and he was very good on Aaron Hernandez and everything. And everyone else, they didn't even get Brady on camera. He didn't even have a response. You know, he clearly negotiated where he wasn't going to be on camera and asked about it at all. He wasn't a part of that episode at all. So I was very disappointed in all of that.
Chad Withrow from Outkick, as always, on our program. Chad, have a great holiday weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right. Same to you guys. Thank you.
Yep. So we know Chad is going to be locked in on the Vols. I have a feeling when it comes to Tennessee, which we'll get to next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Kyle's been holding forever, so he's up next. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kyle, go ahead.
All right. I think that we're going to bypass our starting middle linebacker in the draft, and we're going to wait for somebody to get cut, a veteran that's getting outplayed by a cheap rookie, and that's going to be our middle linebacker. I think the Titans are starting to formulate that kind of theory that they can do that. It's not my favorite, but I think it's what's going to happen.
So last year, thank you, Kyle. Last year, Mike Vrabel told everybody, you'll see there will be tons of free agent receivers that come available for us to pick and choose from. And there was one. Now, it worked. But I don't ever remember, and I've been a fan for 20 years, I don't ever remember. I've been doing this now for 10 years. I don't ever remember a team like banking on a post-June 1st cut, especially now because you don't have to wait till June 1st to cut somebody. Now, maybe because it worked last year, they think it'll work every – I don't know. I mean, that might be – you may be on – I don't know. I just know that the green dot inside backer position is important enough that Aziz, who I don't even think is a very good player, Aziz ended up getting $11 million a year from the Houston Texans. So it obviously is important enough. And again, I don't think it's that important, but there are guys 1 year, $5 million you could assign who the Titans are like, no, we don't want that guy. And so they got to come up with something. All right, that's it for us. Everybody have a great holiday weekend. Be safe. Vandy Baseball is coming up next. Stillman & Company, we'll have a lot to talk about Monday at 2:00.